Greetings, everybody. It is that time of year again when our esteemed employer WPR is raising money to help keep the lights on, to keep those radio transmitters transmitting, and those podcasts podding. So if you're a fan of the show and would like to hear more of it, you might consider making a donation. If you'd like to do that or would like to find out more about how to do that, all you have to do is go to wpr.org/donate.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
So we're obviously going to talk about the extraordinary session on the podcast this week. We didn't get to cover a lot of it last week. The Bills weren't even out when we recorded, and there was a lot that happened this week. But, you know, when we do this, we always try to get some kind of a pop culture reference in there just to keep things light. And, you know, this week we did kind of a deep dive for that one, would you say?
Had to do a little bit of reaching.
Yeah. Here we go.
You're a very nice guy, but I just don't have any room in my life for a new friend, okay?
So, what are you trying to say?
I don't want to be your friend.
I appreciate your honesty. You're a real straight shooter.
So you're all right?
Hey.
I'm a big boy. It's no big deal. Whatever.
That clearly one of the most dramatic scenes from the 1996 comedy classic The Cable Guy, featuring actor Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey there is the voice you hear wanting to be friends with this homeowner for whom he is hooked up with free cable, but it's not happening.
So why did we choose this clip this week?
That's a good question.
We feel like it sort of represents the relationship between the executive branch and the legislative branch in Wisconsin as we gear up for Governor-elect Devers to take office in January.
Well, let's talk about it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, let's talk about Wisconsin politicians who don't want to be friends. So to set things up a little bit, do we want to hear from Scott Fitzgerald and Robin Voss?
Yeah, sure. Because that's where we got the idea to hear from Jim Carrey. I mean, I think a lot of people were struck by how blunt Senator Fitzgerald was in particular at a press conference that preceded this extraordinary session where he talked about why Republicans were doing what they were doing. Here's Senator Scott Fitzgerald.
Listen, I'm concerned. I think that Governor-elect Devers is going to bring a liberal agenda to Wisconsin. And that.
So there you heard a press conference. There were some protesters in the room who started reacting to what Senator Fitzgerald was saying there, and they were shouted down there momentarily. He wasn't saying in that moment that, well, these are just technical changes. He's saying our term lasts until the beginning of January, and we don't like what the next guy is going to do. So we're going to do these things. You know, it was laying it all out there. And so just like that scene from The Cable Guy.
He was doing it in the pouring rain, too.
Right. Which is weird because it was inside the Capitol.
You had a similar scene. We call things scenes now.
Yes, we do. It's all very cinematic. Yeah, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said a similar thing during the floor debate on these bills. I think this was late Tuesday night when the Assembly convened to start talking about this stuff. This is what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had to say.
As we go forward, we're going to have every opportunity to find common ground with Governor-elect Devers. That's going to happen. We have to. We have to work together. But I also know that the situation that we are sitting in right now, if we do not pass these proposals, is that we are going to have a very liberal governor who is going to enact policies that are in direct contrast to what many of us believe in.
So a similar theme there. That there's a new governor coming and we don't agree with them. So Tony Evers is Jim Carrey in these scenes, right? Mm-hmm. He has since the election You know,
he's been installing cable for all sorts of people.
He's got to fill some time before he takes office as governor, so he's just been working part-time as a cable guy.
Yes, right. What a weird side job for him. I spent my life in education, but for the last month I've been installing free cable for people. No, but if you listen to what Tony Evers has said since the election, even as Republicans have talked about restricting his power, he has said, look, I don't want to comment. I mean, it's not all he said, but almost every press conference he has, he talks about wanting to find common ground. Mm-hmm. He keeps coming back to it. And Republicans are saying in this extraordinary session, that may all be well and good, but we don't like your policies. We don't like your politics. We don't trust you. And we're going to do this stuff because our term ends in January and it's our right to do it. I actually wonder when you hear Voss and Fitzgerald come out and say very bluntly that this is about, look, we don't agree with the next governor. It's our right to do this. If they're kind of, they know there's going to be a lawsuit. And so they're actually doing this for legislative intent in the lawsuit. Like they're mm-hmm. saying, this is political. Because the courts will recognize the legislature has a right to do political things. Hmm. And I wonder.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe not. So should we talk about some of the things that they did?
I think we should talk about some of the things that they did.
Well, Future John, in our last podcast, you included some of these updates at the last part of the podcast.
Because they came out at the last minute after we had mixed everything and recorded everything. Mm-hmm. Of course, then we have to throw in an update.
And then even then, we didn't know it all was in these bills. And in fact, I think we're still learning bits and pieces of what was in these bills because mm-hmm. they dropped big amendments like at 4 or 5 in the morning, giant substitute amendments without any like plain language analysis of what's in them. Mm-hmm. So even now, I'm learning things about these bills for sure. But one of the big things we didn't know about last week, restrictions on early voting are in these bills. Doesn't it seem like we've known that forever?
It does, but I guess we just found out about that at like 4:30 on Friday mm-hmm. afternoon, which seems like years ago at this point.
It does.
And this is one of the things that they amended early in the morning on Wednesday morning. They changed it a little bit. But let's talk about what these early voting things are. So basically what they would be doing is trimming some days off of the window for early voting in Wisconsin. So right now it's kind of unlimited. Like cities like Madison have had several weeks of early voting. And under this new, not legislation yet because it hasn't been signed, we're under this.
It's new, legislation.
It's legislation. Mm-hmm. It's not a law yet.
Right.
It would be limited to just 2 weeks, the 2 weeks before the election.
Hey, that's very similar to restrictions that were in place before that federal judge struck them down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is indeed the case. But Republicans think that because of the specific amounts of time that are outlined in this new bill, they think that it's going to be okay and it's going to withstand a court challenge this time around.
And I mean, I can say that the one election law expert that I talked to about this yesterday said it's similar but not the same, and he wasn't ready to go out there and say, yeah, this is going to be struck down in court. Mm-hmm. That was Rick Hassan of the UC Irvine. So, we'll see. But it's very close to what was struck down previously by a federal judge. I think we can say confidently that this is going to be back in court.
Yeah, I talked to someone who works at One Wisconsin Institute, which is the group that brought the lawsuit against some voting laws in Wisconsin a few years ago. That case was decided in 2016, and they said that they are looking into the new language and seeing what they can do in terms of going forward with a lawsuit.
Future John, I think another thing that you were unable to, I'm mm-hmm. talking to present John, really.
Yeah.
It's not until the distant future when you speak like a robot. But one other thing that we weren't able to include last week when we recorded this was this interesting little tidbit about the Affordable Care Act lawsuit. Again, doesn't it seem like that's been out there forever at this point?
Yes.
But we know for those of you that are getting your news from this podcast, we're here for you. Here's what happened with that. We've talked since Election Day about now that there's a Democratic governor and Democratic attorney general, they campaigned on ending Wisconsin's involvement in this multi-state lawsuit to overturn the Affordable Care Act. That's the law as it stands right here today as we record this. Maybe not by the time that we launched, published the podcast, but right now that's law. And we've just presumed that was the case. we shouldn't have presumed that because we did not think
you
creatively
enough.
You know
what they say about presuming?
It makes an...
a pre out of you and me.
It doesn't.
They say that, don't they?
Sure do. So this new language, I keep wanting to call it a new law. It's not a law yet. The governor hasn't signed it. So
unless he signs it later today.
Right.
I feel like by the time you're listening to this podcast,
John will have to come
it could be law.
Yeah.
But we don't know yet.
This new thing that passed the legislature would essentially remove the power of the governor to approve the AG backing out of lawsuits like this and transfer it to the state budget committee. So Tony Evers wouldn't be able to approve Josh Call backing out of this lawsuit. It would have to be the state budget committee, which is, of course, controlled by Republicans with a majority of 12 seats to 4 seats. So it's very unlikely that they would approve such a move.
Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
There you go.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that one, I don't know if that's going to be subject to a lawsuit or not. We keep hearing about Democrats saying, well, obviously this is separation of powers. This mm-hmm. creates separation of powers issue. There's going to be a lawsuit to overturn a lot of this stuff. And I kind of expect that there will be. I just don't know how it's going to look, what form it's going to take, what specific pieces of this they're going to try to overturn. And
yeah,
what a court's going to think about it.
What I think is interesting about this, and it sort of dovetails on this ACA language, is a number of other changes they made to the attorney general's responsibilities in Wisconsin. So the attorney general elect is a Democrat, obviously, Josh Call. And so these changes are kind of aimed at, you know, not having him necessarily be the lawyer that represents the state in certain cases or lawmakers in certain cases. Like if the constitutionality of a state law is challenged in court, a lawmaker can choose to have a private lawyer represent them.
They can't bump Call. They amended it.
Yeah.
And again, I don't feel like extremely familiar with these amendments, which came down in the wee hours of the morning, but they amended it so they can't like bump Josh Call off of a case. But they still would have expanded power to hire private attorneys for themselves.
When they want. Yeah.
Yeah.
So individual lawmakers could do that.
Yeah.
So I think another interesting thing to mention about this while we're talking about it is that a lot of the attorney general's responsibilities, some of the things that lawmakers are tweaking in these extraordinary session bills, are things that like aren't written in the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin. So they make these changes. The only thing that the state constitution says is actually that the lawmakers, the legislature, can set the AG's responsibilities. So if these things go to court, during arguments, a lawyer can't necessarily point to, oh, you know, this is what's outlined in the Constitution and they're violating it. So it's just kind of an interesting thing to note that these things aren't written in that document that is important and seen.
See, we just say seen when we're done doing whatever we do now.
Yes. I just wanted to point that out. I thought that was interesting.
One other tidbit I wanted to mention on this, because even if they had pulled Wisconsin out of this lawsuit, that lawsuit continues. So is it super consequential that Wisconsin's there or not? You know, maybe not. I think one thing to note, though, is that this was a pretty simple and clear-cut promise that voters had a chance to weigh in on. How much did we talk about pre-existing conditions and the lawsuit on the campaign? Quite a bit, you heard from the candidates. And it would have been a simple thing for them to fulfill, and now they have lost that power. One more thing.
That's just one more thing.
If Josh Call is locked into that lawsuit, would he be able to file briefs from with it? Like, he's Wisconsin's in this suit. What if he files briefs that are like, actually, the ACA is a good thing, and I'm being serious here. I kind
of
wonder.
You mean like, could he
like
sabotage
the
lawsuit because he's locked inside of it?
I'm wondering. You can force him to be in there, but can you force him to say what you want him to say? I don't know.
Interesting.
I bet we'll find out.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, next thing.
Things.
All right, so next up, we're just going to say this kind of quickly. A couple other things that Evers is not going to be able to do as easily under these extraordinary session bills. He's not going to be able to change the rules surrounding Wisconsin's voter ID law. He's not going to be able to sort of weaken the voter ID law or make changes to it. It's now going to be in state law, which he doesn't have as much power over as administrative rules, which they previously were. He's also not going to be able to make some changes to the federal waiver process, which is what Wisconsin has used to do things like require work for things like food stamps or Medicaid in Wisconsin. So he's more locked into those GOP-backed proposals that have passed in recent years. These are sort of the things that Republican lawmakers said, hey, we think these changes that we've made are really important and valuable, and we just kind of want to build shield around them to make it a little bit more difficult for Governor-elect Evers to get in there and make some changes to them.
However, they also made changes about rulemaking going forward. So it's not just about locking in stuff they've done. It is about giving themselves considerably more power over the Evers administration than they had over the Walker administration. And this would be done through the Joint Finance Committee, the Joint Committee on for Review of Administrative Rules. Man, if you're in the legislature and you're not on one of those committees, like, what are you even doing? They have all the power now. they're like,
they have a lot of power.
And that power grew in this session. Senator Robert Coles, the lone Republican who voted against these extraordinary session or the most controversial extraordinary session bill, he voted for most of them, but against this one, said in a statement, he believes it will have, quote, unforeseen impacts on businesses, property owners, outdoorsmen, and women and voters throughout Wisconsin. He's alluding to some of the changes in the rulemaking authority there and the restrictions on the DNR. So
moving right along. Shall we talk about some of the things that didn't happen during the extraordinary session?
No.
Yes.
Oh, well. Rock paper scissors is overruled.
I was just going to say that.
Okay, we'll talk about it. Go ahead.
So let's talk about the thing that, like, the extraordinary session in theory was created for and first talked about, which was the Kimberly-Clark deal, the tax incentive package that was, you know, modeled on Foxconn to keep the Kimberly-Clark plant open in the Fox Valley. What happened with that, Sean?
Well, they didn't pass it. They didn't even bring it up for a vote. Senator Fitzgerald had said the week prior that he had 10 or 11 Republican votes, and so they did not bring that to the floor to make people vote on it and watch that bill go down. 10 or 11 Republican votes is not a lot. That's quite, you know, that is 7 or 8 Republicans who were not going to vote for that thing out of a caucus of 18. That is quite a split there. Mm-hmm. And so this was not just a situation where, boy, if they'd had a few Democrats come over, like, and tip the balance, they could have got it. That's a lot of votes they would have had to make up. Democrats said, you didn't reach out to us and do what we wanted to do on this bill, so we're not going to support you. Did not come up for a vote. Another thing that did not pass the Senate, which had passed the Assembly earlier in the year, but did not pass the Senate. This was around 6:30 or so in the morning, I think. The pre-existing conditions bill. This is the bill that Governor Walker called for in his State of the State address. It passed the Assembly earlier this year. It would write state protections for people with pre-existing conditions into state law, but they would not be as broad as comprehensive as the ones that are in the federal Affordable Care Act. So, for example, an insurance company could still impose lifetime caps on somebody. Mm-hmm. Under these protections. So a cancer patient, there could be a $1 million lifetime cap on their coverage, even though they're covered, they're a person with a pre-existing condition. It doesn't spell out how much that coverage, how robust that coverage should be. Mm-hmm. That came before the Senate. It did not pass. Two Republicans voted no, Senator Craig and Senator Kapinga.
So it's kind of unusual for them to bring up something that doesn't pass.
It is.
Why do you think, I mean...
I don't know. I've wondered that too. I've wondered that too. Maybe, and I'm not sure. It could be they decided we'd like to get Democrats on the record and say they voted against protections for pre-existing conditions. Maybe that's one of them. Maybe it was just it had been talked about so much that Fitzgerald didn't want anybody saying he was personally bottling up that legislation. So put it out there and let him see where the votes. Fell down? I don't know.
Are we forgetting about one of the other things that we talked about, which was that the primary election moving didn't happen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Oh, yeah.
That also seems like a long time ago.
Such a long time ago.
Remember, because that was the big thing. Oh, yes, my gosh, they're going to move right. The presidential primary date from April to March. What happened there?
Didn't happen.
Yep,
that did
correct.
Not happen.
and that was as of Monday during the Finance Committee. That was taking up a lot of the
oxygen,
feels
like such a
oxygen,
long time ago,
right?
But it happened after we recorded the last podcast.
Yeah, so that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, we're
that didn't all... It didn't pass the Joint Finance Committee on Monday,
yeah.
Which actually, interestingly, also went into the wee hours of Tuesday morning.
That went in after midnight.
It went. I left at 2 a.m. on Tuesday.
Okay, that's pretty good.
That's wee hours.
Yeah, that's wee.
Yeah, that's wee.
Wee.
Wee. Yeah, so that was kind of the first indication that this wasn't going to happen in the extraordinary session, like the fact that it didn't pass JFC.
Huh.
So there
Man,
you go. A blast from the past.
What a week.
When the past is 5 days ago.
Can we go back before we wrap this up? Can we go back to our opening there? Our cable guy opening?
Mm-hmm.
Because people have been wondering what the next... We've had 8 years where it's Republican everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have been wondering what it's going to be like with a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature. And this is our first taste of this. And what I'm hearing from Democrats over and over is that Republicans are doing this, even though they're like this unjust majority, basically. I mean, more and more people are talking about redistricting, mm-hmm. and gerrymandering, and they're saying, look, this was a 50-50 election, and yet you have 63% of the seats. And there was a election results were certified this week, and so now we have, it's easier to get all that stuff in spreadsheets and analyze where it happened and everything. There are a lot of graphical representations of the 2018 vote for governor and for legislature. One of the ones from UW-Madison political scientist Barry Burden really caught my attention,
mm-hmm.
was...
This is when Sean is going to describe a graphic.
You guys do
on,
better at
on
this.
The podcast.
I feel like John should look at this. John, play some hold music while I get this for you. Okay, we're back. And now John has this graphic in front of him. This to me, I look at it and it's like I understand how the map works when I look at this graphic.
There's some blue dots under a line. There's a line going across horizontally in the middle. There's several blue little circle dots under it. A lot of them are baseline at zero. Then there's a lot of red dots that are above the middle line going all over the place, in the 60 range. And there's a few of them up near the 100 range.
What does that mean? What
okay.
are the red dots?
This may get cut, but I'll give it a go. That line that John described is
the middle
is
line.
50%. It's 50% of the Republican vote share is that line. Okay.
Okay.
So all the blue dots at the bottom, those are seats where basically nobody ran against a Democrat, and so they got 100% of the vote.
Okay.
And in fact, you see most of the blue dots are in these seats where there's no Republican competition. Like Republicans, in drawing this map, packed Democrats into these seats and said, like, we're not going to worry about those. You can have your 36 strongly, they're not all like this, but you can have those hyper-democratic seats. We don't want them.
You're yeah. just not going to have as many of them.
Then you got that line where 50% of the vote, and Republicans live like slightly above that line. All these seats that were decided with like 60%, Republicans got 60% or 55%. That is how they build this 63-36 majority in the assembly in what was otherwise a 50-50 election year.
Well, I think that like a number of people have pointed out that Democrats actually got more votes.
Right. 54% of the votes for the legislature, but got 36% of the seats.
Of the seats, yeah. So that's – and, Sean, this is something that you talked about back when you covered the Supreme Court arguments on the redistricting case. You said that people were going to be looking to this 2018 election and the results because mm-hmm. this is the sort of data that they wanted and needed to make that argument about the efficiency gap and the wasted votes and all that jazz, right?
That was, yeah, the case is built on, you know, the ability for one party to turn votes into seats. And this is, I think this is the most dramatic example yet that Democrats have, where it's very hard for them under this map. You have that hypothetical 50-50 election, and here's what happened.
It's not hypothetical anymore.
So I want to get to the other side of this before, because so this is when you're wondering, like, how are these parties going to work together? Well, Democrats feel like Republicans have an unjust majority. How do Republicans feel about things in state government? How about this statement from Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald on the night that they passed this? He says that citizens from every corner of Wisconsin deserve a strong legislative branch that stands on equal footing with an incoming administration that is based almost solely in Madison. That is a refrain you hear from Republicans, that Tony Evers is only governor because Milwaukee and Madison turned out, and essentially he's the governor of Madison, and we're there to stick up for the rest of you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to hear this over and over and over again for the next 2 years. And
unjust majority versus governor of Madison?
Yes. Yeah, I think this is a pretty good preview of the way things are going to go. I know Speaker Voss says we're going to find areas to work with Tony Evers on, and I guess they will have to somewhat in the budget, but I don't think that things are going to be all friendly the way that they started out.
It doesn't sound like the foundation of a happy friendship.
No, no. Like Tony Evers is not going to be installing cable.
I don't think they're going to be making friendship bracelets in February.
No.
No.
Well, if it happens, we'll be here to cover it with Jim Carrey movie references. Sean Johnston is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Listen, folks, buying illegal cable is not the right way to get the WPR Politics Podcast. No, to do that, all you have to do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you'll get new episodes delivered to you almost every single week. You can also find it on Google Play and Stitcher, as well as many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.